All right. Numbers 13. I want to develop two things that we had talked about Sunday morning. Last Wednesday night, we came in and we were talking about Zacchaeus out of Luke 19. And we kind of went down a vein that I think is very, opened up something that's very significant, obviously. And we asked the question, what caused Zacchaeus to even be curious about who Jesus was? And the answer is obvious. It's because he heard somebody talking and testifying about what Jesus had done in their life. And so we talked about the power of testimony a little bit. And then we came in Sunday morning, and God gave me a word and some teaching on Sunday morning on the fruit of Canaan. And so that's where we are tonight. I want to come back in. We're going to read just a few verses and just get us back in the setting. The children of Israel have completed their very brief journey. This is not at the end of the 40 years of wandering. This is at the front end of that 40 years where they have gone from Egypt. They have gone through Mount Sinai, and they have come to the edge of the Promised Land. And before they went in the Promised Land, the Lord came and told Moses that he wanted him to send spies in so that they could see the land. This was twofold, I think. God is a God of strategy, and I think although we see him just blowing that out of the water in Jericho, but the Lord just sidetracked me on something and said that part of the reason that he sent the spies in is he wanted Caleb to see his inheritance. And a lot of times God will send us into a place that we feel like is premature. We're not allowed, maybe not allowed to stay there, or maybe the circumstances push us to where we can't stay there. But it allows us to see our inheritance. Sometimes God will give us dreams. He'll give us visions. He'll give us words from other people. He'll just put a stirring and a prompting in us. And Caleb, part of the spies going in was about Caleb getting to see his inheritance. Because when he came back, he said, I know where I want to dwell. I know what my land is going to be. And it was not the easy land. He had some of the hardest land. It was the mountainous. It had some extremely large and mighty inhabitants of that area, but he said, that's my inheritance. And he even came back and made Moses promise. And he said, God's promised me that I could have this. One thing, just a side note on this, some of these things that God has dropped in our spirit, that is him showing us something that he is saying, that's yours, and I'm going to give that to you, and you hold on to that. I love the fact that 40 years later with Caleb, he hadn't forgot that promise, something God spoke to him 40 years ago. A lot of us would have thought my time is past, because he was over 80 years old at this point. We would have thought my time is past, but he said, I'm still a man of war as I was from my youth. I have not forgotten my promise. I have not forgotten my inheritance that God gave me. Now I'm in this land. I'm going to claim it. And I absolutely love that about Caleb. Joshua and Caleb are two tremendously bad cats. We look and we see that aspect of Caleb, and I love the warrior in him. The thing that I love the most about Joshua, and Joshua was a great leader. He was an awesome man. That if you can lead that many people, you're awesome. Okay, you're awesome. But the thing I love most about Joshua is when Moses would go in and meet with God, and Joshua would just hang around just to get the residual. That tells me how much he loved the presence and placed value on the presence. And so these are two amazing guys. But getting back to this, let's look into 13, verse 2. Or verse 1, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, send thou men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall you send a man, every one a ruler among them. And then it goes and talks about the 12 men that were sent, the 12 tribes that they represented. One thing that I do want to throw out there on that just popped in my mind. When you go and you do, it's not just about you. You're representing something. Every man in here, Brother Keith, when you go and you do, you're not only representing and planting a flag for you, but you're doing it for your household. Okay? These tribes were represented by these men. You represent something. You represent family. You represent generations. You represent kingdom. You represent sonship. You represent as a bride. You represent all of these things. And so we are not afforded the luxury of floating through life and doing whatever feels right to me. Or what I think's the right thing to do, or this is the way I feel, and I want to be happy, and I want to make myself. You're not afforded that luxury, okay? You gave up the right for a lot of things when you said yes to Rhett. You gave up the right for a lot of things when you said yes to Caroline. You gave up the right to a lot of things when you said yes to baby T that's in your womb right now. And we need to realize when we say yes to God, we're saying no to a lot of those things, but we're giving up the right. The Word says that your body is not your own, okay? And I am bought with a price, and all of a sudden, I'm representing something. And I see that just in these verses here without getting into family lineage. But it says of the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. So Caleb wasn't just representing Caleb. He was representing the whole tribe of Judah. I love that. And I've forgotten that Caleb was of the tribe of Judah until we got back into this. So let's look on verse 17. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said unto them, get you up this way southward and go up into the mountain and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many. And what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not. Be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. Now Sunday we talked about the fruit of Canaan, and you know, I asked the question, I said, what did they bring back when they came out of the promised land? They brought grapes. Why did they bring grapes back? Because that's what was ripe. We make the mistake as Christians of trying to bring back something that is not what is happening in our life. We will try to bring back fruit of something that was happening 10 years ago or 15, and it's not where you are. What we need to be is if we want to reach the world, if we want to touch people and get people to at least be curious about kingdom life, curious about the gospel, curious about who God is and all of that stuff, it's got to be something real and relevant that's happening in our life where we are right now. Now, one thing that we do, guys, I don't want us to get caught up in the trap of thinking that my testimony is boring right now or not significant right now. That's a lie that the enemy will tell a lot of you guys because maybe y'all got young kids and right now y'all are just, I mean, my girl's in the middle of it. You know, Casey, you're in the middle of it. I mean, so many of you guys, our church is a church of young people for the most part that have a lot of young kids, you know, early school age and all of that stuff. And sometimes you think, well, my life's not great right now, man. I'm just trying to raise kids and survive. And don't buy into that lie of the enemy. We think that we have to have this grand testimony to reach somebody. We think that our testimony, we think that the greatest testimony is somebody that he who has given much or forgiven much, loveth much. You know, we think that that's the thing and it's got to be somebody that's got a big testimony that, man, I have been through the ringer. You know, some of these guys at the Blake House have the most tremendous testimonies because they've been through the ringer, all right? Todd, Brother Todd Pope, he's got a great testimony because he's been through the ringer. But I've always said something when our little kids get baptized, the greatest testimony is not somebody that's been through the ringer. The greatest testimony is a kid like Michaela Odin that says, man, all I've ever known is the presence of God. I don't have all of these scars and I don't have all of this stuff, you know. I don't have these addictions and I don't have this and I don't have this. To me, Aaliyah's got a far greater testimony than a testimony that I've got. Jeremy, she's got a greater testimony than your testimony. Although we look at yours and it's like, man, God delivered me from this addiction and did this and this and how it's, you know, spared my life and all that stuff. And we think that's grand and that's going to just have this huge impact. But her testimony in reality is more powerful than a testimony of just deliverance. Okay? I was going through a bunch of stuff. My office kind of collects everything. I don't know. It's made out of Velcro, I think. I walk in my office at home, and it's like, oh my gosh. I mean, it's like everybody from three households. The door opens and everything just it goes in there, and it's literally made out. But anyway, I was throwing away a bunch of papers and old, you know, and I contribute to it as much as anybody. I ain't throwing them under the bus. I'm as bad as anybody. But I was going through, and I threw two garbage bags of trash out yesterday. I told Lori, I said, I'm gonna clean this thing out good and put a padlock on it. But I ran across as I was going through and throwing out old trash and different things and, you know, junk mail and stuff like that kind of gets thrown on the counter and then it winds up in there. And there was a card in there that the girls had given Lori for her birthday. Her birthday was last month, and they gave her a card for it. And I looked at it. Errol's like, did it really? I thought it was your writing. But anyway, I read the card and I saved it. I didn't throw it away. But the card said, "Thank you for showing us how to live well. Thank you for showing us how to live well. I want you to understand that you in your place where you are right now is significant in impacting people's lives." We're talking about the power of testimony. We're talking about the fruit of Canaan. When they came back, they brought back grapes because that's what was ripe at the time. They didn't come back and say, "Man, I saw some dirt and it looked good. I bet we'd grow all kind of wheat there." And Moses told them, God told Moses, he said, "You see if there's wood in it and all of that stuff." God knew what was in it, but he said, "See if it, because we'll need that for building stuff and all of these things." So they were to spy everything out. But what we do is we think we're going through seasons where we're insignificant because I'm sitting here and maybe I'm getting my brains beat in by the world, so I don't have any kind of, there's no fruit on my thing. But the truth is, what is one of the, I'll skip the Apostle Paul because he wrote 2/3 of the New Testament. When I say Silas, what do y'all think of? What's the first thing that comes to your mind when I say, put the two together, Paul and Silas, what's the first thing you think of? Come on, y'all are Bible scholars. Anybody? Yes. It's the first thing you think of. Paul and Silas were in a Philippian jail. They got the tar beat out of them. They were in stocks in the lowest part of the prison. The jailer was entrusted to keep them safe because if they escape, you're dead. Now, was that a fruitful season in their life? We would think not, but is that not one of the biggest stories that you remember of the Apostle Paul other than his writings? If I asked you, I said, tell me the significant things about the Apostle Paul that you remember, and you're probably going to run out there, and you're probably going to say the Damascus Road experience. And that was when God was slapping him off a horse to get his attention. And then the other one would be when he was beaten in jail, bleeding, wounded, not what we would think was the most fruitful season of his life, but what was he doing anyway? He was praying and worshiping. That's what shook heaven. It wasn't the fact that, hey man, I got it going on and I just saw, you know, 2,000 people get saved or laid my hands on this guy and his, you know, eyesight was restored or this or this or this. But in a place where it was seemingly nothing was going right at this moment. I mean, they had come in and Lydia had gotten saved and they had started a church in her home. And, of course, that stirred up the devil, and the devil man was kicking their teeth in on this. They just got beaten, thrown in jail, all of this stuff happening. And he's sitting there, and my question to you, because we've all been in them places where, like, man, I'm just getting my teeth kicked in. Anybody? Maybe on a how-many-day-a-week basis. Sometimes I feel like if I'm having 4 good days and getting my teeth kicked in 3 days, it's a successful week. Because I'm over 50%. You know, Jeremy walked in tonight and I was like, "Brother, you walking upright?" He's like, "I'm here." He's had a bad time with his back last few weeks. You would think right now would be a time when you'd say, well, let's... Right now might be the time he needs to be in the pulpit more than any time. Not when I've been praying for you for 6 months and everything's going on glorious and my, you know, all my cows are pregnant and my fields are ripe and all of this stuff's going on and, you know, it's just, you know, I've gotten 3 promotions at work and life's just wonderful and grand and all of that. But that's the reality is that's not always what's ripe in our life. Sometimes what's blooming in our life or what's ripe in our life is the enemy is trying to wreak havoc with us. What do we know Job for? Woo! Son. Unless we want to impact the world. Because he's pretty significant in the Word. Not just a mention, but a whole book. Even the heathen know who Job is. I remember when the girls were little, we were over at, I think this was back in the day before, I know it was before Lolly Malls, when we used to go and shop at like Cumberland Mall because it was like one of the only malls around. You know, there wasn't no Douglasville or, you know, North Point and all that. I mean, you went to Cumberland Mall, you know, so we were over there and you ate it to Piccadilly. That's what you did. I'm telling my age. Right, brother? That's what you did. And we were over shopping one night, and it was on the tail end of one of them long, and I hate shopping. I do, but I, you know, I love my wife, so I was enduring it. And we were standing, and this just stuck with me because there was nothing about this that was a spiritual comment by the lady or anything like that. But there was a lady that was waiting on us, and Lori was buying stuff for the kids and this and this and this. And I think we were in Rich's before it turned into Macy's. I think we were in Rich's and all that. And that the lady looked at me, and she says, and it was a jovial black lady. She's like, "You got the patience of Job, man," and all that stuff. And I'm like, the Lord was like, "Everybody knows who Job is." And my point in saying that was that everybody remembers his name, and everybody also knows why they remember his name. Because he trusted God, and he was patient, and he endured, and he withstood. And he made it through the test of trial and tribulation. And so he had a legacy that has spanned thousands of years because of that. So what's the fruit in Job's life? He was a righteous man before because God came to the devil. The devil was going on it. And God said, "Have you considered my servant Job?" Nobody remembers him because he had it going on before all the junk hit the fan. Everybody remembers him because he walked through it with faith and trust and confidence. I love the greatest thing that I love about Job was probably at the lowest depth of despair when his wife looked at him and said, "Just curse God and die." You know what his response was? "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him." That's the statement that I tag. If you want to tag something, that's the statement I tag on Job more than anything. "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him." He's walking in with something. That's some good fruit of Canaan, isn't it? We think Canaan's always like, "Woo!" And Canaan's wherever God causes you to experience him, to know him, to walk with him. And it's not always the easiest place. There was a point in Jesus' life when Canaan was the wilderness for 40 days. That was Canaan to him in that season. Because it said the Spirit drove him into the wilderness. Just like he was leading the children of Israel into the promised land, he led Jesus into the wilderness. So what was that? It was Canaan. To be tested. Of the enemy, to understand who he is. So my thing is you're going to have your greatest impact when you bring out the fruit of where you are. So now here's a question, what does the fruit look like? It's not always a mind-blowing miracle. Sometimes the fruit that's going to have the biggest impact is you walk through something with grace. You walk through something with hope. You walk through something with patience. You walk through something with long suffering. God gave you the grace to deal with something. God gave you peace. One of the most notable miracles that we think about Jesus and we reference to, and we preached it hundreds of times, we've heard it preached hundreds of times, is when Jesus simply calmed a storm and brought peace on everything. That was the grapes. That was the grapes. It does not have to be wow to make a wow impact. One of the biggest things that you're going to impact the world and wow the world is when they see you walk through this thing consistent. Consistently. And not only when they see you walk through it consistently, they see you walk through it consistently with longevity. That's one thing I'll say about you, Linda Carter. You know, I don't have to live with you. I'm sure Keith's got horror stories. Not bad horror, so you know what I'm saying. I'm just kidding. You're flesh like all of us, and I don't ever want to put you up on it. But one thing that I will say about you, Linda, our whole adult life, you have been consistent in your faith and your passion and your mindset for the kingdom and your worship and everything else. That's one reason I love having you as our worship leader. There are people out there that are more gifted musically than you. There are people out there that are more gifted vocally than you. All right? You can go to honky-tonks and find that. But I personally don't know anybody that I'd rather have up there because of your consistent affection for Him. That's why I'm a big fan of yours, Robin. Because ever since you got saved, you have been a lover of God. Have you done everything right in that time? No. Have you had sin in your life? Absolutely. You have dropped the ball. You fumbled. I'm sure. Because we all have. But the thing that you have modeled a life of pursuing Him and kingdom stuff. And that leaves a mark on folks. All right? That makes your kids say, you have shown us how to live life well. It didn't say live life wealthy. It said live life well. So I want you to understand that the grapes that you bring back, certain times of year it might be wheat. Here's the thing about this, guys, is you never know the arena of people or the realm of people that you're going to inspire or influence the most. That's why you can't pick and choose which fruit is more attractive or which season is more attractive and want to spotlight the attractive season and then want to shrink back in the bad season. Because what we'll do is we'll shrink back in the bad season or in the busy season and say, I can't do that right now. I'm just trying to survive. I look at my own kids. They got 3 children. Both of them have a career. They are super busy. Life is just full bore. Y'all play zone defense with 3 kids. I know it is challenging, but right now is when God can give you all the grace just to do this life well so that other people look at it and say, you know what, that's what I want. That's what I want because they're doing it well and they're keeping their priorities right. They're loving each other, they're loving God, but yet they're progressive and they're moving forward in all of these things. In all things, do it as unto the Lord. And so that's when we can have the impact. Here's something that I was talking with somebody after church. I think it was maybe Carolyn and I were talking after church Sunday, and we were talking about the seasons and the grapes and all that stuff. You know who probably got more excited about this than anybody when they came back with the grapes? The vine dressers. The wheat farmer didn't get as excited. But the vine dresser's sitting here and he's drooling. Because he's saying, you mean, I can grow that? I can do that? If they came back in another season and they brought in a big bundle of wheat, then who's drooling over that? Wheat farmer. So what I'm saying in this, guys, is the season where you think it's not the most attractive fruit or the fruit that you want to showcase might be the season that has the greatest impact on the lives that you're supposed to have the greatest impact on. Because when you got divorced, you didn't quit on God. When you got divorced, you didn't quit on God. You kept loving. You kept chasing. You stayed on the stage. You even asked me and Linda, do I need to step down? We're like, nope. Because your heart's pure. You are loving Him and you're chasing Him. And you know what you're doing? You're coming in and you're coming with a... Because what? Here's the worst thing that could happen right now is we come in and as we talk about, you know, Sunday, for example, when we're talking about T.W. and Jamie and what God's doing in their life and how it's just, you know, blowing up with them just being a, you know, man, they've a good role model and a mentor for Adam and Tana and Brandon and Annie and all of this stuff. If the enemy to come in and say, well, you failed in that area. And he might have whispered that ear in your ear Sunday. I know how he works because he whispers junk in my ear all about every day. Now, we're tight, so we'll just talk. Was it God's will for perfect will for you to get divorced? No, it wasn't. His perfect will is for, you know, you and John to be abound and man just chasing after God and, you know, driving to the ramp 3 hours just to you know, getting His presence up. That was God's perfect will. But just because that did not happen does not disqualify you from bringing fruit in and saying this is abundant life, because you can still walk in abundant life as a single mom. And you know what that does? That encourages other women that are going through the same thing that you went through to say, if she can do it, then I can do it. And you know what they do? They say, I can grow that fruit. I can have that peace. I can have that hope. I can have that joy. I can have that expectation. You mean I can have that? And it whets their appetite just like the grapes whet the appetite of the vine dresser. So y'all see what I'm saying on this? Don't think just because circumstances have given you a gut punch that you don't have any fruit to bring in. Because we all have fruit that we can bring in on what season we are in life. All right? Get that. Know that. Know that. And you can so impact. As a coach, are there not some extremely valuable lessons that are to be learned in loss and failure? Sometimes better lessons than the ones that are learned when it's easy and you win all the time. Some of these, I've seen some kids that were super, super gifted and it just came easy for them and they won all the time and all that, and they failed in life because they never understood the fruit that came out of adversity. They never understood what it took to get way down in your gut, way deep, when everything is punching you in the face and saying, you know what, I'm going to overcome. I'm going to overcome. And so that's what we're talking about, guys. When it's fantastic, yes, hold that fruit up high. When it's not fantastic, yes, hold that fruit up high. Because us being real at where we are is what's going to impact the world. Because you know what not only turns the world off, but grosses the world out? It's when we come in and we put on this facade of sick makeup and say, oh, look at this, this is me and all that. And the whole time everybody's sitting there going, because they know that's not real. Now, I'm not saying we launder all our junk before the world. I'm not saying I come in and every time I have a bad thought, I get up here and say, man, I lusted after somebody last week. I got mad at my wife, you know, and, you know, shot her a bird. And I'm not saying you do that. I'm not saying you launder everything. But there's fruit to be bore in adverse. I don't do that, Michelle. Not where she can see it anyway. Yeah. Y'all see what I'm talking about on that? Everybody relate? Are y'all getting this? That sometimes the greatest fruit that we can bring is the fruit of, you know what? God gave me the grace to walk through this stuff. Sometimes that's the greatest thing. Anybody got any comments on this portion of it? Y'all feel free.
Seeing other people chasing God just with their whole heart and soul, you know, and it just gives me permission to go there too.
Yes.
So, anyway, just part of the grapes, you know, just going and tasting of that, you know, and it inspires me to go deeper with God.
Yes, yes. But because a lot of times what we'll do is, you know, the enemy will come in and they're like, when we really get passionate and start chasing God and just, you know, are just like, man, you know, I'm going for it and all that. The enemy will do a lot of things. He'll come in and he'll say, well, you going by yourself? Ain't nobody else going with you. You know, you're just weird. You know, is this pride? You know, you're just doing that so people see you. You know, I know all the stuff he'll lob at you and everything. But when you're right, when you do and you go to, you know, whether it's, you know, the ramp or, you know, South Carolina or IHOP or Redding, California or wherever, that God is stirring and moving, and you get around, it gives you permission to do the same. That's one thing I like about you guys. I know I'm not the only crazy person that's walking on this planet. I'm serious. I'm around. That's part of the power of forsaking not the assembling of the saints. Because when we come together, we strengthen each other, we encourage each other, you know, we lift each other up. We do all of these things, and it helps us to run this race together. One thing that I found about, by no means, David, I have a wealth of knowledge on horses. We've had them off and on through the years. But one thing that I have found out about horses that I see across the board is that they're herd animals. And they do not like to be alone. There is something about a horse that wants to be with another horse. And they might bite at each other and kick at each other and all that, but you get them out in the pasture, and you know what they gonna do? They clumping up. Just because God put something in them that they are herd animals. And I think God did the same thing about us. The only thing that I think I threw this out here a week or two ago, the only thing that God said that he did not like about the garden that was not good, y'all know what that was? He said it's not good for man to be alone. That's the only thing. Everything else, he said it was good, or he said it was very good. The only thing that he said was not good, he said it is not good for man to be alone. And part of it is, when these people went in, the notes I put on this fruit, bring back the fruit of the land as a testimony to what is there and an encouragement to the others. That's the twofold thing on this. As a testimony to what is there. That we can come in. What's happening, Grant? How you doing, brother? Good to see you. Straight back from Kenya. Awesome. Good to have you with us tonight. Grant's going to be sharing Sunday morning, so we're excited about that. So we're pumped. So y'all just, that's another thing to add to your prayers this week. But it is to show the people what is available to them. To show the people what is available to them. And that is, if you're going through a hard time, but you know what? I'm making it through this hard time with God's grace and with God's peace on my life. The thing about Jesus, and I've always been amazed with the disciples, and obviously it's easy for me to say this 2,000 years removed, they're freaking out when they're crossing the sea and the storm's going on and Jesus is asleep in the bow and they're sitting there freaking out. No, number one is, do you really think God's going to let Jesus drown? No. And if I'm in the boat with him and God's not going to let him drown, then you know what's going to happen to me? I'm going to survive. And so, by me going through this thing, and like we said, the greatest testimony, the fruit of this was he released peace over the storm and peace into their lives. Okay? The first time it happened, they said, what manner of man is this? That the wind and the waves, the second time they said, surely this is the Son of God. Things begin to get elevated as they saw the same fruit again. And that's what will happen. When you walk through something with peace, Chris, when you go through something, brother, and it's, you know, some jacked up stuff, and you walk through it with peace and confidence and hope and trust, the first time you do it, you know what they'll be like? Man, that was odd. I don't know. Scratch your head on that. There you go. But you know what? But you know what will happen, though, as you do it again and again and again and again? All of a sudden, their perspective will begin to change, and they'll be like, man, there's something different about him. Instead of just, hey, having a good day, his wife must have been in a good mood last night. You know, if that happens one day, that's what we all do.
I come on, I said, you got to talk to me. I'm going crazy. I said, here's a guy at work. He got the IQ of a split pea. I want to talk to you about this. I don't know. And I shouldn't have done that, is what I'm saying. I should have just told you. And she even said, she said, look, it'll be better tomorrow. Trust me.
And
today, it actually was a good day. So I thought, well, I should have. I don't know. It was just weird about it.
We all work with guys that have IQs of split peas. So sometimes we're the guy that has the IQ of split peas.
Well, I'm kind of new to all this. When I'm saying it, kind of bothered me thinking, well, I went off like this at work. Now I've messed up everything. Everybody's going to think I'm an idiot again. You see what I'm saying? Instead of understanding I'm just human, I made a mistake.
It's
I think I messed it up. Man, I got to start over from scratch.
Yeah, it's the
you had a bad. She said you had a bad day. It's just a day.
It's the consistency that they see in it. And that's the thing that is it becomes a lifestyle with you instead of just a, he had a good day, had a good week, you know, whatever. And they see it becomes a lifestyle. Then all of a sudden, that's the fruit that begins to stir the curiosity in them to this. I mean, I wonder what's different with him, because I've known him for a long time and he's different now than he used to be. And there you go. So that's the fruit of the testimony. So you're a better man now than you were a month ago, brother. See, it's the steps of progression, except for yesterday. We all have those, okay? All right. So anybody else in this? Anybody else got any comments? Nick, what you got, brother?